Welcome to The Wonder, exploring perspectives, rituals, and observances of modern, naturalistic, earth-revering, pagan religious paths. Here are your hosts, Yucca and Mark.
Welcome back to The Wonder, science-based paganism. I'm your host, Yucca.
And I'm your host, Mark.
And this week we are talking about divination. What is divination? What are some of the tools? And what do we think about this whole thing?
Right. Because there's a lot to say about that. Divination practices of various kinds are extremely common in the pagan community. And they are reviled by many conservative religious movements as sort of horning in on their god's area of influence in terms of predicting the future and stuff like that. So there's a lot to be said about divination and the different practices and how they, what we think about them. And also more broadly about the so-called witchy aesthetic, the kind of vibe that you get when you create a setting with candlelight and tarot cards and incense burning and pentacles and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Well, let's start by talking about what divination is and some of the tools that are particularly common.
Well, in its common usage, divination is using some sort of mechanical means most of the time to predict the future. And that's why when I'm asked if I practice divination in my religious practice, I say no, because I don't believe in prediction of the future. But I am a tarot reader, and I've done other kinds of divination as well. And I find those to be very satisfying and illuminating practices. They just don't predict the future.
Now, I've also often heard it for perhaps not just the future, but seeing the unseen, getting a better glimpse into something, seeing far away, right? You're looking through to understand what's happening right now. So even though it may traditionally be just about prophecies in the future, I think today it's used in a little bit of a broader sense.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. In the sort of classic envisioning of looking into a crystal ball, the idea of being able to clairvoyantly see what's happening at some other time or in some other place is part of the kind of common folklore around the idea of divination.
And the name divination, I've never looked this up, but it sounds like the same root as divine.
Yes, it does. And it's used in the same sense as, for example, a divining rod to find water. And I think that speaks to the discomfort that conservative religions have about divination, that it is, as I said, horning in on God's purview, right? You know, only the supernatural ruler figure can see what's going to happen or determine what's going to happen in the future, rather than we mere mortals. Obviously, I have a very different take on that coming from a science-based perspective, and I'm sure you do too. But that doesn't mean that we just say, oh, well, divination, forget about that. Because the divinatory practices can be extremely powerful in terms of illuminating things that we may not have been aware of in our own subconscious and drawing out understandings of situations that we might not otherwise have seen because of the symbols that we discover in the course of doing the divination practice. Mm-hmm. So in my tarot practice, for example, most of my tarot practice is just a draw of a single card a day. And that becomes sort of a lens through which I can view the day's activities and kind of contemplate that particular meaning. And it's just a useful practice in my experience. But when I do actual, full spread layouts of the cards, I find that I reveal things to myself that I definitely have not seen, that I've missed, and that sometimes are real revelations about ways that I've been blind to myself and to my own process. So that's how I use the divinatory techniques. Some of them, I don't read entrails, but I've done things like ceromancy, which is dripping hot wax into water so that it forms shapes, and then understanding those shapes in sort of guided visualization kinds of terms, as characters or symbols. I'm not a big fan of the runes, but I know many people are.
Yeah.
Those are another random symbol set that you can use to bring out that deeper
Some
understanding.
Folks like tea leaves,
mm-hmm.
or coffee grounds too. And not necessarily with symbols, but the gazing into a reflective surface, particularly bowls of water, they're reflective, or mirrors, or the crystal ball kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Looking for shapes in smoke and incense, in clouds. Yeah.
Yes. And in doing that, the creation of that atmosphere around you is as important as the actual mechanics of the divination system, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because, if you're sitting at a plastic table in the food court at the mall, trying to do some kind of divination, that's probably not going to take you very deep. There's going to be a lot of distraction around, and harsh lighting and noise, and just and kind of a crass commercial vibe.
Mm-hmm.
And so, these are things that we do in our homes with darkened lighting, with candlelight, with incense, having done a ritual to ground ourselves into the ritual state before we do the divination piece. It's all of a piece with the ritual techniques that we've been talking about here on the podcast.
Yeah.
And I know that in the pagan community recently, there's been a lot of debate about the so-called witchy aesthetic. The idea that people who get attracted to the witchy aesthetic aren't real. They aren't real pagans because they haven't taken our classes or read our books or whatever that is. Personally, I think that being self-aware enough to understand that a particular atmosphere, a particular aesthetic context affects your mind, and that you can therefore influence your mind by affecting the atmosphere around you, that's a pretty big gateway into a reality-based, science-based ritual practice.
Yeah.
And of course, many people are also subscribing to all kinds of supernatural stuff, and that's what they're doing, and okay.
Mm-hmm.
But just in terms of our ability to use ritual to impact ourselves, I think that the witchy aesthetic is a good thing.
Yeah. Well, I think it's, as it's set up, it's something that most humans can immediately enter into.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there, there's cultural considerations and personal considerations that each individual can build upon. But that witchy aesthetic that we're talking about has a lot of things that is just going to hit humans. That low light, the often repetitive sounds, the flickering of candles, this strong smells. Those are things that are very instinctual in us.
Sure. And we use often in the witchy aesthetic, we use very powerful symbols like skulls and bones and what was I going to say? The skulls and the bones. Oh, and then also sort of old fashioned ceremonial magic style symbols like pentacles and, runes and so forth. And all of that can really have a profound impact on your sensorium, where you find yourself surrounded by this atmosphere that really makes you go, ooh, I'm in a different place where I have access to knowledge and experience that is not ordinary.
Yeah. So we went into the witchy aesthetic, but let's come back to the divination practices, which
sure.
often are done once in an environment that really supports that. Something that I noticed as we were describing some of the different types of tools was that some of them had pre-existing sets of symbols, like the tarot and the runes, where others were more freeform.
Mm-hmm.
Looking for, you're completely free, and when you're finding shapes in tea leaves or finding shapes in the smoke. But with tarot and runes, there's already symbols, there's already meanings that are attached to those. And someone can choose to use them or not, but there is more of a library built around that.
Right. But every card is so rich with symbolism that you can kind of pick and choose which of the symbols that are on that card mm-hmm. that you think are appropriate to your circumstance. Myself, I'm just not very imaginative, but what we're talking about here is the same effect as is experienced when people undergo the Rorschach blot psychological test, where they're shown these ink blot images that are just smears and presses of ink. And then they describe what they see in these images, right? In serography, as I described with the dripping wax, or in looking at tea leaves or coffee grounds or gazing into the shadows inside a crystal, your mind has to form those patterns itself. It has to seize onto the physical thing that you see and then turn it into a horse or your mother or a gate or whatever it is that has meaning to you. I find that it's very helpful to have that library of symbols already there. In the last year, I've switched the decks that I'm using. I'm no longer using one that's the Pamela Coleman A.E. Waite based deck. I'm using the Wildwood deck instead. And so there's still a lot that I'm learning about the ways that this deck is different. And some of that comes out of the book that came with the deck. Some of it just comes from me and what I see in these cards.
So as someone, I'm not very deep into that. Are you saying that you were doing the more traditional tarot set and that you're using a different set of cards now?
Yes.
Or are they just different illustrations? Okay. So there's the more traditional set that has been built on for quite a few centuries at this point.
Since the Renaissance.
Yeah. But now there are also other decks that have different styles of artwork, but the cards themselves are different cards with different names and symbols.
Many of the cards are. This deck is still set up in a four suits of 14, 22 major arcana setup, but what those cards are varies. Some of them are the same, but some of them are not. And some of them are reinterpretations of the core meanings of some of the traditional cards. Some of them just go off in fully new directions. Mm-hmm. So I'm finding, for one thing, the aesthetic of these cards is more to my liking. It's less ceremonial magic-y, which tends to have a lot of Abrahamic religion stuff in it. It's got lots of Hebrew letters and biblical references.
I've always struggled with that element. That's been a barrier to me of entry.
Yeah. And I think that it is for a lot of people that that simply don't have either a rooting or an interest in those traditions. The Wildwood deck is very much as you would expect. It has a card that is the shaman. It has a card that is the guardian. It has a card that is the ancestor. It's more organic and more focused on the natural world. The royalty cards are all animals. It resonates for me a lot more than the other did. I'm glad that I did the work that I did to learn those cards over so many years, but I'm really enjoying working with this one much more. So, and I think that the interest that people have in different kinds of divinatory system comes down to whether they're like me and maybe have a hard time turning tea leaf patterns into something recognizable and meaningful, or whether they're much more sort of visually oriented and able to riff off of a little pattern of tea leaves into a whole imagined scenario.
Yeah. So I don't think of myself as having a divination practice in this. So the tools that we've been talking about are things that I'm familiar with. And a few times over the years, I've, looked at decks or watched YouTube videos about how does the layout work and that sort of thing. And I've played the divination class for wizards on several occasions. That's a great, great subclass. But I don't think of myself as having a practice in divination, but I still do things which I think are trying to accomplish the same idea, which is that search for meaning. And I don't think that I am finding the meaning outside of myself. It's a process of exploration, but it still is my mind putting together these ideas. Mm-hmm. I don't think that it's somebody, some divine or some fairy or some spirit coming in giving those ideas to me, but I might do I like to sit outside at night and just kind of let my mind go. And sometimes it'll focus in on a particular problem, and I'll just hang out with that problem or hang out with that idea for a while. And I imagine that that might be a similar experience to what some people have when they're doing some of the more meditative divination practices, like the shadow or water gazing and the smoke readings.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it sounds to me like you just don't need physical tools to do that same process. The physical tools do a couple of things, one of which is just that they're fun.
Yeah.
They're cool. And, when you set up your whole environment with your candles and everything, and then you lay out these cards, and they're very mystical sort of cards, and
That process is getting you deeper into it. That's part of the ritual, part of putting you into the space to be there in the first place.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And you know, we've said this before, but we'll say it again. Because something is pleasurable or fun, there's nothing wrong with that. pleasure and fun are good things. As long as no one is being hurt, they are great things. And we, you know, encourage you to go and get them. So even if it's just that, wow, it's really cool and makes me feel really witchy, that's great. Good for you. Go ahead and do it. But if it's, so just the fact that it's pleasing and pleasurable is plenty of reason to do it. But there is this deeper level of understanding of yourself and of your circumstances that can come with internalization of the meanings of whatever your symbol system is. You know, one of the reasons that it was challenging to me to do things with like tea leaves, for example, is, okay, let's say I see a tea leaf combination and it looks to me like a horse. Well, now what does horse mean to me? Now I've got to, you know, sort of dive into myself and figure out what all my associations are with a horse. And I'm not so imaginative in that way. So it helps me to be given a little bit clearer of a declaration of, you know, think about this. You know, here's a card about gatekeeping. What are you gatekeeping and what are you experiencing as gatekeeping?
So for those of us less familiar with these kinds of cards, it sounded to me like you're using them in two ways. One is simply drawing a card and reflecting upon the meaning of the card. Mm-hmm. But doing a full reading, there's usually a spread that you lay out in a particular, you put multiple cards out in different positions.
Yes.
And each of those positions has a meaning. So if you came across that gatekeeping card that was in the position of your future or your past or something like that, you would then look for a meaning in the meaning of the card and the position. Am I understanding that correctly?
Yes. Yes. And that lends a level of complexity to the reading that you wouldn't otherwise have. Because now every card, which is a set of symbols, is now viewed through a lens of a particular position. So while, you know, you may have the strength card in the position about your self-perception, that's very, very different than that same card appearing in how others see you or where you've been in your recent context. So there's playing cards have so many potential combinations that they are essentially infinite for purposes of human use. It would take billions of years to play out all of the different combinations of cards that there are. That's even more true of tarot cards because there are more cards.
Yeah.
72 and 78 instead of 52. But when you add the positioning of the layout, that adds an entire additional layer of randomization and meaning, which can really help you to focus your understanding of a given card and what it's telling you.
So it sounds to me like it's when you're doing the fuller form, then you're having to create an entire narrative, an entire story where you're connecting pieces and ideas. And essentially it's like they're characters at this point.
Yes, in a way. I usually use a layout that I created and published on the Atheopagan blog. I don't know how long ago, maybe a couple of years ago now. And it uses 8 cards, which is not quite as many as the traditional Celtic cross layout that most people use. And those 8 cards represent where I have been, where I'm headed now if I keep doing what I'm doing, what is known, what is hidden to me, what my challenge is, how I can help myself to evolve, what that evolution would help me to achieve, and then a summation theme or archetype for the entire reading. And I've found that it does create a kind of storyline, but it's not a storyline with a plot. Mm-hmm. It just helps me, you know, there I am standing on a landscape, and it just shoots me from a lot of different angles.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so what's hidden from me is what's behind me. It's what I can't see. Where I'm headed now is the path before me if I don't make any changes. I've found that that's been a pretty useful lens for me to do my tarot readings through. But people can create their own, or they can do the traditional one, or whatever.
So
they
do
think.
You usually go into a reading with a question that you're seeking answers for, or is it more just a free form of exploration?
It depends. Sometimes it's just a temperature taking of my life. Like, what's going on right now? I haven't done this for a while. And I have more or less superficial understandings of how things are going in my life because I'm so caught up in the momentum of it. I may not be seeing things that I'm missing. But then other times I come at the cards not so much with a question, but with a situation.
Hmm.
You know, I have a situation at work and I want to unpack that, figure out what's going on there, what I can do about it, what's mine to take responsibility for, what's not, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Hmm.
I guess to me, you know, I really wanted to say, and I think I already have, but I really want to reiterate it, that if people are attracted to ritual behaviors, they should do them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, maybe not like, you know, Plains Indian sun dance thing where you skewer yourself with hooks and then hang from a tree. You know, maybe don't start there. But if you're attracted to just playing in that context of candles and skulls and bats and seasonal symbols and occult symbols and all that kind of stuff, just muck around in there and have fun. Figure mm-hmm. out what works for you, and you'll find that after you do that for a little bit, you're in a very, very different state of consciousness than you were when you arrived.
Yeah.
And that is the beginning of learning a psychological pagan practice.
And we've talked about it quite a few times on this podcast before, but when you're first getting into this kind of thing, and even later on, that sometimes it might feel silly or you might feel like you're just making it up, but that's okay, right? It's all made up anyways. So that's fine. If it has the desired effect that you're looking for, if it's having that change in your awareness that you are seeking, then it's working. And if it's because you put the lights down and put the flame on and drew a card from a deck, then great. If it's some other thing, then great, right?
Right, right. Yeah, this whole idea, and we have touched on this before, but I think it bears saying again, the whole idea that there's something wrong with something that's made up is, to my mind, it's a conceit that is run out there by established religions that want to make it sound as if what they've been doing is eternal and everything subsequent to that is just made up. When the truth is, it's all made up. You know, yeah. Some of it accreted over centuries.
And some of it they literally voted on.
Yes. Yes. Some of it. Yeah. There are perfectly legitimate religions operative in this world right now that were literally started by an individual who decided to run their stuff out there in the world and see who was going to follow it. And it turned out that people did. For better or for worse. Mm-hmm. So don't worry about it if you feel like you don't know what you're doing or you're just making stuff up, because the stuff that you make up will be perfect for you. It'll be absolutely exactly what you need in order to drop into a ritual trancey state where you can start to learn a lot more about yourself and about the world around you.
Yeah. And if you want some help from that witchy aesthetic, well, that's what it's there for.
Mm-hmm.
So.
That's what altars are for, focuses. It's what ritual dress is for. It's what all the different things that we do in order to create that space. That's what all that stuff is for. It's the power is not in the trappings. The power is in your mind.
Yeah. They're the tools that we are using.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. You might want to look into that Wildwood deck, Yucca.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool. And it does have a lot of rootedness in sort of Celtic traditions.
Mm-hmm.
So, that might resonate with you. And it's cheap.
Yeah.
So
I've seen some prices on some of them before where I've gone, well, that's a little out of my budget. So I like when things are affordable.
You know, it's really a crazy thing. The person who did the planning for this deck, mm-hmm. is a guy named Mark Ryan, and he did a different deck previously called the Greenwood Tarot. And it's been out of print for like 20 years or something like that. And it's worth a fortune. It's ridiculous. And I have one of these decks. And I've been trying to sell it and continually knocking the price down on eBay, and nobody has bit yet. But yeah, people that are, you know, collectors of tarot decks, and there are people who do that, they really want this one.
Yeah.
My personal opinion is that the Wildwood deck is a better deck. I like it better. I like the art better.
Yeah.
So it goes.
I've also seen people, beautiful bags and carrying cases that people will make for them. And when you get on Etsy and look that up, there's some amazing, amazing pieces of art to hold your deck in, mm-hmm. that I would imagine could be a tool to help people really get into that space, right? You bring out the bag and it's already, you're holding the bag and it's just, oh, wow.
Yeah, what's in there?
Well, yeah, this is definitely special.
Well, especially as you do this practice over a long period of time, the cards themselves become imbued with so much association of wonder and discovery and interest that just the sight of the cards themselves starts to move you into that that ritual state. Mm-hmm. So when people talk about ritual tools being magically charged, well, I don't believe in a magical energy, but I know that I have ritual tools that I've been using for more than 30 years, and I know just the thing that I need at that right moment in a ritual, right? And it's not that thing, it's this thing.
Yeah. Well, there's the association that you have with it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And so I guess to the degree that I believe that things are charged with magic, that's how I believe my ritual tools are charged with magic.
Mm.
Because of all the memories that I append to them.
Yeah.
So go out and light a candle and
yeah. This is a great time of year, I think, for divination. We're recording this right at the solstice right now. It's the dark for those of us in the northern hemisphere. It's the dark of the year. We're about to be going into a new calendar year. This is a great time of year for all of this.
A great time to speculate about the new and to really take a hard look at what your current vector is. You know, where are you pointed and how fast are you going there?
And do you want to?
Well, exactly. Because
do you want to change that a little bit? Yeah.
Once you figure that out, then you can decide whether that's a good idea or not. But I know that in my own life, it's really easy to get my head down and just be kind of working my way through it and not thinking about the big picture as much as I'd like to be.
Yeah.
So it's a gift to yourself to do that. Well, thank you so much, Yucca, for this conversation. I always enjoy talking with you.
Likewise. Thank you, Mark.
You can reach us for comments or questions at thewonderpodcastqs@gmail.com. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll see you next week.